Hello. Hello. My name is Lucas Irvin.
My name is Daniel O'Neill.
And we do not have a name for this show yet, but this is our podcast. I'm sure we'll get a name for our show here in the next few weeks.
We'll just wait till something incredibly random happens or someone shouts at us from the street. And yeah. We'll probably name it that.
Yeah. I first want to say that this is going to be a comedy-based podcast. Daniel and I are going to be talking about several different aspects of comedy. We have similar interests when it comes to comedy. I'm a huge SNL fan.
Me as well, since I can remember I was watching SNL. Simpsons, obviously, too. We're both huge Simpsons fans.
Yeah.
From back and in also, the original days.
Yeah. By the way, what year were you born?
I was born in 89.
Okay, so you were born the year Simpsons came on the air.
Yeah, so my first recollection of watching The Simpsons was obviously reruns when I was probably 10. So it had been on for a good 10 years
when I
started watching it.
Yeah.
But, the mid-90s ones is when I grew up on. The golden age, if you will.
I think I must have been around 10 years old, too, when I was, actually watching it. Me and my sister, they would have on, we only had four channels, in our house.
Oh, yeah, same here.
Yeah, yeah, on Fox, they would have, an hour block of The Simpsons. Yep. My sister and I would always watch them. But, SNL, Simpsons, we're going to be talking about different comedians.
Different movies we've seen, the ones that we like, the ones that we hate.
Yeah, and, we're also looking for some input from you guys as the show goes on. Let us know what you think. If you like it, if you don't like it, what you'd like to hear us talk about. We're gonna cover all aspects of comedy. What works, what doesn't. Different tastes. We're gonna talk about, differences between Conan O'Brien, David Letterman, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel.
Don't forget Arsenio.
Is he really still on?
No, he was canceled.
So he came back on and got canceled.
He came back on, but they let him be on the WGN network, just very local stuff. He wasn't national.
WGN is the CW's bitch.
WGN is the food stamps of broadcast television.
I like that. This is basically what we're going to be talking about. We hope you enjoy. This is obviously very scary, our first episode. So here's what I'm going to do. Daniel, I'm going to turn it over to you. I want you to tell me and our audience a little bit about yourself, where you come from, what's your name. Now, just kind of give a brief overview. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so mostly from here, which we're at right now is Lincoln, Nebraska. I went to school here. I've been working here, too. Just turned 26.
Nice.
Yeah, so born and bred, pretty much Nebraska kid. And just one of those quirky kids who lived in Lincoln. And so I wasn't growing up on a farm. And we just talked about, I'd watched weird comedies growing up. I used to watch, obviously, Simpsons, Seinfeld, crazy stuff. I never grew up on cable, though, so I never watched anything on Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
I was a little bit too old to really get into Family Guy that much.
Yeah.
Because when that really hit its stride, I was probably, already a sophomore in high school at that point. I really kind of developed my sense of humor just being, even when I was young, I never really laughed at a joke that I could see coming.
Right.
Whether it was a movie or a stand-up or even somebody in person trying to make you laugh. If I already knew where they were going with it, I wouldn't laugh. What really always made me laugh was people that are way on the left field. And they would think of things and say things that I knew I couldn't think of. And that would really make me laugh. So Conan, Dave Attell, Norm MacDonald, all those guys, all people on SNL. I mean, if I couldn't think of it, it really impressed me, and that stuff really impresses me. It makes me laugh.
Yeah.
So.
That's kind of where my sense of humor falls as well. The real deep-seated sense of humor I have is inappropriateness mixed with surprise. Hmm. But the more inappropriate and the more, out there, I guess, if you can combine those well, just perfectly, then, you know, that's probably where I'll get a laugh.
It's like a dead clown showing up at your birthday party. You know what I mean?
Speaking of dead clowns, tell our audience what comedian you and I first started bonding on when we started working at Nelson together.
I don't know how it was brought up, but ever since then, we've been softly giggling to Dave Attell.
Yeah.
And those of you who don't know Dave Attell, I highly, highly suggest that you check anything and everything out on the internet that is Dave Attell related. He's a stand-up comedian that's been around for quite a while now. I think he started in the 80s,
yep.
Was briefly on SNL as a writer, kind of a position for maybe a season. Yep. And he's really what people like to say, quote-unquote, the comedian's comedian type guy that didn't really make it absolutely huge. He had a couple TV shows and whatnot, but he's always been the type of guy that other comedians have been like, this guy's just fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he is a solid dark comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of the most impressively funny people. I watched his special Road Work at midnight when it aired on Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, I was crying from laughter. Just watch it. I'm not going to spoil a single joke. If you can find it on YouTube, look up Dave Attell's Road Work. Absolutely awesome.
It's just him, you know, hitting his stride like he did kind of in the 2000s, early 2000s. He had a show on Comedy Central. It was also hilarious, called Insomniac.
Yes.
Where the basis of the show was he'd go to random cities, usually larger cities like Philadelphia, New York, New Orleans, and he would basically start at like 9, 10 o'clock at night, and he would stay up all night, and he'd go around to the different bars, different weird parts of the town, and talk to people who were up all night, even people that worked at different overnight jobs.
Yes.
People who did, you know, clean the sewers or did whatever. And
yeah.
The way he made just everything so incredibly dirty and funny, I just thought was hilarious.
I think even beyond being dirty or filthy, just he's honest about the darker sides of life.
Yeah. He's not afraid to say, hey, I'm ugly, I'll probably die alone.
Well, and, I think it's even more than that. I think it's just, you know, how people really live their lives, you know, like, comedians have that luxury. You know, it's not like actors or musicians. Comics can, you know, communicate through comedy how life actually is. How it can be. I mean, whether you're a fan of Dave Attell, Ron White, whoever it may be, I think that's the really cool aspect of comedians, is that they get to be absolutely 100% honest. About how they feel, and I think that's actually, you know, why I think we're both doing this podcast. So yeah, Dave Attell kind of united us, and so I asked him if he'd like to do the show. Danny agreed, and
yeah.
this is where we are. Do you remember the first time you saw Saturday Night Live? Do you remember a single sketch or something like that?
Not the very first time I saw Saturday Night Live, but I do remember some of the first memories I've had of Saturday Night Live. I was probably, you know, like the same age, like I said, I'm probably 10 years old or so, and I was staying up, and I remember kind of the mid-late 90s cast a lot. Obviously, at that point, Will Ferrell was huge, Daryl Hammond, Chris Kattan had, for some reason, I never personally thought Chris Kattan was that funny, but for some reason, he had characters on all the time on SNL.
Yeah.
Chris Kattan, obviously, Anna Gasteyer, all of those people. And so I think it was probably the year after, I think Chris Farley left and Sandler left, like 95, and there's this big turmoil going on in SNL.
Yep.
Where Lorne Michaels almost had his job in jeopardy, and they said, you gotta save the show, the show's, you know, quote unquote Saturday Night Dead. And then all of a sudden they hire all these sketch performers who turn out to be some of the best ever.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember, is all those sketches. I remember watching the Cowbell sketch, I remember watching that live, I remember seeing some of the most famous sketches, you know, Will Ferrell as Bush. I remember watching all of those things happen live. I remember, Ashley Simpson, when she went on there to sing her song, and she's got caught lip syncing.
Mm-hmm.
I watched that live too.
Yeah.
Those are some of the two most famous things ever happened. But what about you? Do you remember your first sketch or show? Or?
You know, there's not a, you know, first time I remember. It's just kind of always been something I've watched. Like, I've always considered Saturday Night Live, like, the closest thing I have to a sports team, like a favorite sports team, where no matter how good or bad their season is, I always root for them. And I still remember when Farley was on. I still remember impersonating at the breakfast table. Like, I would get in trouble if my folks caught me, you know, watching SNL kind of late. I started kind of young. I was probably 7 or 8 when I started watching SNL. Because I remember the next morning at breakfast, you know, after church, we'd have, you know, breakfast as a family. And I remember impersonating Dana Carvey as George Bush, Mike Myers as, the coffee talk lady, Linda Richman. Yeah. I used to, my parents would be like, what is wrong with this kid?
Yeah.
You know, I just thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And then when I really... Farley is somebody, if you were lucky enough to have seen SNL when he was a cast member, it's just unforgettable just seeing him on there. It's just a presence you don't forget. And he, even if you just had like a bit part, you noticed where he was at all times.
Yeah.
First actual sketch, I want to say, I remember when Sally Field hosted, and they did this sketch where Matt Foley was a Santa. He was a mall Santa. And, you know, he did this hilarious poem, which I've seen, you know, plenty of times since, where he's reading the kids a Christmas story as Matt Foley. "'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the van, your old buddy Matt fell asleep on the can. His children were nestled 2 time zones away with his ex-wife and her husband in sunny L.A. Matt woke up the next morning and realized with a chill and a quiver that he was living in a van down by the river." And I remember watching that when that aired. And I just thought
so dark.
Yeah, like it's really messed up, but I was like, yeah. It was so cool to me to see an adult act this hilariously inappropriate.
Yeah.
Like, it was so cool that adults did that. I thought it was just me who, you know, I always got in trouble every week at school, and I was always in the principal's office for doing stupid shit that people like, you know, Farley, Jim Carrey, you know, all these other people were doing, you know. Granted, I'm not comparing myself to them. I'm just saying it was really inappropriate.
I hear you. We talked about a little bit too, as far as I think with the same general timeline, we started, you know, kind of watching SNL, and we touched on the top of the podcast about kind of the different subjects we wanted to kind of cover.
Yeah.
You know, different things on the podcast, and I know definitely we'll delve more into SNL. Also, we talk about movies, like obviously comedic movies, old, new, in between.
Yeah.
How do you feel about people that have made the transition from SNL to movies? Like, who do you think did it the right way, and who do you think's done it maybe not necessarily the wrong way, but a way that's not that funny?
Like a way that just didn't work to their benefit?
Yeah, they're better just to stay on the sketch comedy scene and be
an
ensemble rather than take it on heads on by themselves.
You know, it's funny. You know, there have been some people, Phil Hartman especially, who came out of the 80s and early 90s, who Phil Hartman did plenty of movies. He did a lot of TV.
Yeah, he did.
He did talk radio. He was...
Simpsons.
He was Lionel Hutz and Troy McClure in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I think he did it fairly well. He's one of those people, too, who when you see him, he commands a real presence.
Oh, yeah.
He's a powerhouse of talent, and that's not just in being funny. He was a great singer. He could be a great leading man if necessary. He could be downright frightening. I think he would have been bigger. I don't think, this is probably a corny thing to say, but I don't think Hollywood gave him a fair enough chance or gave him enough opportunities.
Yeah, I could say he was older when he, obviously compared to the other SNL cast. I want to say I heard he was like 30, in his mid or late 30s but when he got hired on SNL.
Yep.
And so at that point, we look at, okay, he was on SNL for a few years after that. you know, Hollywood kind of looks at it and says, well, he's in his 40s, you know, do we really want him being a leading character?
And it's just kind of the bullshit thing of Hollywood, which, you know, it kind of is what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, there are some people I'm surprised that they didn't find a fit for. You know, God bless Dana Carvey.
Oh, I think he's amazing.
Like, he's amazing in Saturday Night Live sketches. Really good. I think he's one of those people. It's interesting how comedy kind of has a generational gap. Like, if you look at the 90s, we really started revering people, like, people who are really in your face, like Dana Carvey, Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Chris Farley even falls in that category. He's somebody else who I don't think really got much of a chance. He had a couple of good ones here and there.
Yeah, he didn't really get his full
potential.
He got movies pretty much written for him that would be fat guy goes crazy, falls down a bunch of times, but he never really got that movie that really challenged him and showed all that he could do as an actor.
Yeah. Like, I really think if, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, it's sad that he's passed away. And granted, it's been almost 20, he died in 97, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
I think if he had gone on, we would have seen him take on roles that John Candy maybe did, in like Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I think he would have been.
Or even take on the movie roles later that, let's say someone like Robin Williams took on, which is a little bit darker.
Yeah.
Showed the dramatic side, but still kind of funny, but also serious type of thing.
Yeah.
We played like the teacher, or the psychologist, or the troubled older guy. I think Chris Farley would have been great doing something like that, too, that Robin Williams did. But yeah, Dana Carvey, I agree, is someone who was never better than on the show.
Yeah.
But absolutely. When you get him to be the leading guy in a movie, it just doesn't quite click.
Yeah. Mike Myers had success with Austin Powers. And yeah, he had So I Married an Axe Murderer as well.
Yeah.
He's one of those people, too, that, I don't know, SNL is the best he's going to do.
Yeah, you know, most of his success came from Austin Powers, which deservedly so. I think most of those are pretty funny movies, and they're pretty original, and I know that he kind of created it and wrote it and stuff. I give him props for that. But since then, I mean, the first Austin Powers came out in 97. So we're talking, again, almost 20 years since he had. I know Goldmember kind of came out in 03 maybe, but
yeah.
Goldmember was okay. It was funny, but it was still, you know, you're in your third installment of a movie series. The kid's kind of tiring, and he did kind of the same jokes over and over.
Well, and that's what I also mean by a generational gap of what's funny, because we went from, you know, God, Dana Carvey, again, you know, all these people, Robin Williams even, you know, just very in your face. In regards to comedy, not many of them had a lot of subtext in the way we see now with, like, Paul Rudd or Jonah Hill and how they do comedy, you know, nowadays, and, you know, like, the films that we see nowadays.
Yeah.
But,
I see what you're saying. It's definitely a generational gap when, you know, at one point, right when, let's say, someone like Adam Sandler was still on SNL, or maybe right after it when he did, you know, freaking, what's the movie? Happy Gilmore, and those are great movies, but again, it's very kind of in your face, he was yelling, but then after that, he's kind of gone down, because it's not the same.
Well, and he's, I don't know what it is, if it's just that he has his own production company, and he just wants to do his own movies with his own friends, or if he really thinks it's funny. You're going to hear me say this a lot on the show. Fuck Adam Sandler.
I thought you were going to drop the N-word.
No. There's no reason for that.
You're going to hear this a lot.
You're going to hear this a lot.
Get off my porch.
I don't like NASCAR. But,
Adam Sandler movies.
I hate him.
He's not, I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head. he has his own production company, so he can pretty much green light anything he wants.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's fun to make movies with his friends. And he's like, well, fuck it. If I can get $30 million for making movies with my friends and dicking around, why not do it as many times as I can?
He knows that he has a large enough fan base that they're going to see whatever he puts out.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm sorry, that's kind of sad. Yeah. Like, that's, I don't know. I don't want to look like some hipster douchebag, but that is completely not what you're supposed to do if you're a funny person and you are lucky enough to work in showbiz. Matter of fact, it's kind of disheartening to me when I hear Adam Sandler gets upset because he got Best Actor for the Razzies, or he read the emails that leaked from Sony saying that they don't enjoy working with his terrible movie ideas, which is why, I don't know if you knew this, he got a deal with Netflix right after, maybe it was right before, but around the time the Sony hack had happened.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So Sony execs were saying, we can't stand his movies? Yeah,
they can't stand it. God, I wish I could find the article. I was just like, I'm glad there's somebody out there who knows it's complete horseshit.
Yeah, I just feel like it's the Walmart of comedy movies, and the fact that it's there, it's convenient, and you know no matter where you put a Walmart or what's in it or what the prices are necessarily or what service you get, there's going to be a shit ton of people usually that are going to go to that Walmart. I think Adam Sandler has been around so long, people kind of relate to it in a certain way, and they're like, oh, I'll just watch an Adam Sandler movie. And it's like, but are you really getting anything out of it? Is it really going to make you laugh watching Grown Ups 5 or whatever? Watching Kevin James go down a water slide.
Oh, dude. You
know, it's just like,
speaking of Kevin James, again, another funny comic, but he's doing shitty movies. I hate to say it, but I kind of think about that line in The Dark Knight when Harvey Dent tells Bruce Wayne, you know, you either die a hero. What is it again?
It's either you die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Now, granted, Kevin James and Chris Farley, they're not quote-unquote villains.
No.
But if Chris Farley was alive, he would be Paul Blart. Right. He would be the fat guy in Grown Ups.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And, shit, it upsets me.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know why it upsets me. It's just one of the things that always bugs me, you know, that people choose to do. Paul Blart 2 got a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I saw that. Yeah.
And there was an article on UpRocks or something like that, Upworthy, that said the most beautifully written reviews on how terrible Paul Blart 2 was. And I read them, and they were so goddamn funny.
I think I read a few of the Twitter reviews. It reminds me of that old SNL sketch where Will Ferrell's doing a play. Remember the one I'm talking about? Will Ferrell's playing Robert Goulet.
Yeah.
He has a play, and at the end of the skit, people write the reviews of what they saw in the play. And this one guy writes a review, and he goes, I don't think this legally qualifies as theater.
There was one review in that sketch. I whipped a battery at the lead.
Yeah. Another one was... halfway through the show, I fell asleep, woke up 4 minutes later, and wandered on the stage in a weird half-dream sleep. But the show was such a terrible mess, no one seemed to notice or care.
That's exactly right.
It was called Red Ships of Spain.
Yeah.
With Alec Baldwin was in
there. Yeah, it like had Will Ferrell, Chris Parnell, and the host, Alec Baldwin.
Red Ships of Spain, yeah.
Okay. And you know, that's kind of a good... It's a really good point to make just because of the fact that what is it that really upsets you about really bad comedies? Like, what can you say?
I mean, I guess the same thing that we just kind of briefly touched on, but I can elaborate a little bit more. I mean, it's the same thing of, you know, to me, when people don't have to try, and so they therefore they don't, because they realize they can still make money off of people. Yeah. Like, for example, I'm going to mention a few people that, you know, people may or may not think they're funny, and that's fine, because comedy is...
Watch out, Hollywood.
It's subjective. We're going
to be blacklisted after our first bombs. Show.
No. But
we don't bring up NASCAR.
I never thought Dennis Leary was funny. I never did. I gave him a fair shot because I saw him blowing up. a few years back getting shows every now and then on TV, and I was like, who is this guy? Every once in a while you'd see a 90s movie with him in it, and then I heard, oh, he's a stand-up, so I'm like, oh, and then I kind of looked at some of his albums and listened to it, and I was like, this guy's not funny. And then I think people just get, what angers me is it's just when people try to just appeal to their demographics, if you will, to get an easy laugh.
Yeah.
When people, let's say, for example, someone's a Spanish American or Latin American, whatever you call it, comedian, and his whole thing is he goes up on stage, says a few one-liners, then he gets into, oh, yeah, and he starts talking about a Mexican voice and makes an accent about essays or lowriders or how your mom always doesn't roll the burritos right. I'm always just like,
Carlos Vinci isn't exactly a full-blooded Mexican.
No, I heard he's like Guatemalan or something like that.
And German.
And yeah, so it's just things like that anger me. Whether it is you're American or whether it is you're European or, like I said, like Latin American, it doesn't matter to me. I think it's just it's a cheap way of just getting a laugh and not being original and just exploiting people that are going to buy what you're selling no matter what.
Yeah.
That's what I said, like the Walmart of comedy. Like, people are going to buy it no matter what it is.
That's funny. Okay, that's actually what I meant to get back to a minute ago. You mentioned Walmart. I think every film Adam Sandler does should just be called $5 Bin.
There you go.
Like
the bargain bin.
Yeah, just call it $5 Bin, put it direct to DVD, and, you know, whatever, you know.
Or every DVD you buy, donate 70 cents to some Ugandan kid with no shoes.
Yeah.
Or something like that. What angers you about comedy or comedians? Or
kind of along the lines of what you're saying, where they just, you know, at the heart of it, it's when they do it for the wrong reasons. Granted, money always helps. I don't think it's selling out when actors do, you know, movies or shows just for the sake of the fact that they can. I totally get it. I think there are people who, you know, neither of us are in Hollywood, so it's really hard for me to really go into this. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It sounds kind of grandiose for me to really try and, you know, give a fair explanation, but, you know, it's just from a viewer's perspective, somebody who's just seen a lot and read a lot and enjoyed quite a bit, to really give a fair analysis on people's decisions, even if it, you know, like, kind of pisses me off when I see advertisements for Hotel Transylvania 2. You know what I mean? Like, it's it's Madea, their business. Like, Madea
goes to the post office.
Nobody gives. Yeah, let me tell you something about Madea. Tyler Perry makes anything he does with Madea. He makes Madea Goes to Jail look fucking awful. Like, it makes.
Which, by the way, those of you who don't know, that movie was made almost 30 years ago. It was called Ernest Goes to Jail.
Yeah.
Those of you who don't remember Ernest.
There's a white guy.
Yeah. People look it up. It's Ernest. Ernest had one about he saves Christmas. Ernest Goes to Jail.
He didn't have to dress in drag.
Yeah,
either.
Ernest Scared Stupid, which is about Ernest saving Halloween, basically.
Ernest needs a kidney.
It was basically like, Ernest was this crazy hick white guy who'll get himself in wacky situations and be kind of the stereotypical crunchy bumpkin, if you will.
There you go.
And Tyler Perry comes around, does the exact same thing, but a black version.
I never thought of that.
And it's not original at all, because I'm like, this is Ernest Goes to Jail, but except it's an old black lady who's actually a white guy dressed up as a black lady, which, by the way, Eddie Murphy did that a long time ago and did a way better job in Nutty Professor.
Yeah.
Way funnier.
And, you know, just to let you guys know, viewers, if you really want a good idea of what Tyler Perry is, Tyler Perry makes the Cleveland Show look like The Color Purple. Like, he is...
Oh, man.
Guy, if there's anyone who angers me more than Adam Sandler, it's Tyler Perry. But anyway,
we're starting to sound kind of racist over here, but... Another thing about Tyler,
we're gonna go down a really bad place.
He better not be dating a white chick, let me tell ya.
But yeah, like, this is kind of the stuff we're gonna be talking about. If you guys have any questions, anything you guys like for us to talk about, feel free, you know, post below the link. You know, just let us know what you think. Be cool about it.
Be fragile.
Be fragile. But,
I know I'm fat. You can hear it on the podcast.
You know, that's funny. There's a thing Patton Oswalt talks about where he can tell people are fat over the phone by how they pronounce B words. Yes. Like, he's on the phone with somebody, you can tell that they're fat just by how they pronounce words that start with B. Like, I bought the bracelet at Bailey's Best in Brittles. And, yeah, this is the kind of shit we're going to be talking about. We're going to go off on tangents here and there, but we hope you enjoy it.
And also, if you guys have something random you guys want us to talk about or review, like a movie or an episode or even an actor or comedian, like said, all the things we talked about, just put a comment or let us know, and we can definitely talk about it. I'm sure whatever you guys you've seen, we've probably seen or at least heard of it. So
yeah, and you know, like that's a something else too that I like that you brought up. You know, if there's a movie you guys like for us to review, absolutely. I think we might actually. We'll try and do that here in the next few episodes.
Talk about TV shows like Louie or something comedy related as far as that. Obviously SNL.
Yeah, we'll be throwing in SNL and, you know, whether it's by mention or the topic of the show pretty frequently.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Daniel, are there any shows that you're watching right now? Any comedies that you're watching? Anything new?
Not comedy shows. I just go off Netflix, and so it's kind of give and take. There's a show that I just started last night, which I've heard a lot of good things about, but I just started it. It's called The Trailer Park Boys.
Okay.
And basically, and for those of you out here who probably watched them all, because it's a huge fan base, I apologize for the lack of knowledge I have. But basically, I know a little bit of backstory about how the show was made and produced and stuff. Basically, it's a very low-budget television show that was created and shot and everything in Canada by these three guys. Kind of run, kind of like if you know how It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia was created. They created themselves, they produced themselves, they basically were their own cameramen at one point.
Well, and if you watch those first episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and you watch like a new episode now, like the production value is completely different.
Oh, yeah. Completely different. Trailer Park Boys is very resemblant to the very first episodes of as a Canadian version, basically. And it's basically these guys who are in a trailer park, and some of them just get out of jail. But it's a very specific type of comedy. I guess if I had to put it in a specific box, it's like if you mixed, I'd say, maybe The Office with a little bit of Ron Swanson in there, a little bit of Ron White mixed with, you know, Reno 911, like that kind of comedy. It is inappropriate, but it's also smart in how it's inappropriate. It does make fun of white trash, but it does everything in a smart way, which you don't expect, which is why I really like it, because it makes jokes where you don't expect it. And it's very character-driven. After a while, you know the characters, and so therefore the things that they do and say are a lot more funny than if you don't know who they are.
Okay.
What about you? What have you been watching recently?
I just finished watching that show Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I've seen a couple episodes. Yeah, Tina Fey, right?
Produced
by Tina Fey.
Yeah. And you know, I talked about it a little bit the other day on Facebook wall, which you know, that's just as important as the CNN homepage, but it has some good one-liners. It has some good dialogue. Ellie Kemper, who plays Kimmy Schmidt, she plays a woman who, along with three other women, have been locked inside of this, what would you call it?
Like a bomb shelter?
Yeah, like a bomb shelter. There you go, bomb shelter. I was going to say hatch, but that's lost. But, she's been living in a bomb shelter for the past 15 years. There was some crazy preacher who convinced these people that the apocalypse was near, and these women were finally rescued, and they had no idea that the world did not end.
Yeah.
And
they're raised kind of traditional, like they're wearing long dresses and their hair's put back and no makeup.
A Mormon's wet dream.
Yeah. Scripture says.
Yeah. And you know, Ellie Kemper does a really good job in the lead. Mm-hmm. I like her.
She's made for that role.
She is. Oh, absolutely. If you remember her, do you remember her from the last two seasons of The Office?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
As Erin the secretary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she, her and Ed Helms were, you know, the on-screen couple.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, really good on that show, really good on this show. However, and this is my opinion, I hope you still watch it if you're deciding to. It's, I don't know. It's a little, the rest of the characters in this, I don't know, in this world just don't coincide with the main one quite well. Because there's a very, very stereotypical black man. There's a very, yeah. very stereotypical rich white lady. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody else just falls into this very commonplace, you know, cookie cutter form of a character. And really, Ellie Kemper is the one having to boost everybody's self-esteem and get everybody going and, you know, keep their spirits up. And it just sounds, and it is, in my opinion, kind of a one-dimensional show. There are good things about it, but overall, it's, you know, it's not something I would normally watch. Actually, I'd been recommended by a friend to watch it, and I ended up watching it.
Yeah, it's definitely not bad by any means, but it's very Tina Fey. And what I mean by that is, if anyone's watched 30 Rock, that's very Tina Fey.
Yeah.
It's very kind of quick dialogue, quick jokes. You gotta pay attention, or else you're gonna miss some jokes in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of the jokes, and a lot of things that I had, I thought a lot of 30 Rock was good, but one thing I always thought was annoying with 30 Rock, and it kind of bleeds over to Kimmy Schmidt, the new show on Netflix, is since the dialogue is the way it is and the actors are the way that they are, a lot of stuff doesn't really translate from what Tina Fey writes on a page to when they act it out. What I mean by that is some jokes are just boom and then boom, boom. There's like four jokes in a row.
Yeah.
And the actors, you can see, have trouble getting it all out and emphasizing what they need to emphasize. So therefore, some of them are mumbled to where I thought, like, I would think about it, and like 2 minutes later, after the show keeps going on,
yeah,
2 minutes later, I'm like, oh, that was pretty witty and funny. Yeah. But it doesn't match the situation that they're in at all, and it doesn't seem like any sort of realistic conversation you ever have with anybody. It's too smart. It's almost like if you and I are sitting there talking, I can't sit here and within 2 seconds reference some World War II general and then reference another South Park episode, smash it together in one sentence and make a one-line joke about it. And then at the same time, you come back with the same clever one-line joke, and it's like,
that builds onto it. Yeah.
It's not how it goes in real life. Yeah, no, like, it's very scripted.
And it is clever, and I think you made a good point in the fact that it's not... there's some loss in translation from what Tina Fey is writing and what the actors are portraying. I totally know what you mean, because I see her as the Weekend Update anchor in a lot of some of the things that are said.
Yeah,
just said differently. But you know, Jane Krakowski, who plays the rich white lady,
She's simply not
Tina Fey
in 30 Rock too. Yes. Yeah, kind of plays the same character, if you will, a little bit.
Little, she plays the same, very high same maintenance, character from both, yeah.
Yeah, very high maintenance, well-off to do selfish white lady.
And very, very skewed and confusing background. Like, one of the things in the show that I actually found funny is that she's the daughter of two full-blooded Native Americans.
Yeah.
And there are some funny parts in it, I'm not going to lie. But, some of it's just kind of doing it for its own sake, because it can.
Yeah.
And Tina Fey is actually in the show, the last two episodes of The Lawyer.
Yeah, I think I saw her, had a weird wig on or something.
Yes, she has this really tight afro wig. Yeah. And she is so friggin'... Her and John Hamm are both in it.
Yep.
And they're so damn funny.
I thought John Hamm did an amazing job.
Yeah, he did. Like, that's what I wish the rest of the characters were like.
Yeah, John Hamm hit it out of the park.
Oh my god, he's hilarious. But the thing of it is, It's kind of one-dimensional in that kind of, you know, I don't know, like, they're acting like they're smarter than they actually are.
Yeah, it's almost like Tina Fey sat down at her laptop, and she had a solid month, and she was like, I'm going to make the funniest script with all the jokes crammed into one storyline I can, and that's what she did, but like what you said, a lot of it necessarily can't translate the very best when it's the lights, the camera's on, the lights are on,
yeah.
And now you have to physically say what's on the page.
And there's a lot of other involvement too. There's a lot of other people putting their, their part into the piece, and it just doesn't. I really wanted to like this show because I like Tina Fey. Tina Fey is good as Tina Fey. When she's on Weekend Update, she's awesome. If she had taken over Jon Stewart's job at The Daily Show, I think she would have been awesome.
I think so too, yeah. But
her, almost cartoony type of shows that she does, even Mean Girls, like, this kind of reminds me a little bit of Mean Girls.
Yeah, it is, because Mean Girls was very similar. It was very female-centered and very... females don't hate on other girls. Yeah. Let's have basically, for lack of a better term, girl power type stuff. You know what I mean?
And it's also, dare I say, it's a little bit vapid in some of the dialogue. Because, yes, you do have Ellie Kemper's main character who, wants people to be who they are, wants them to be happy, etc. But there is so much flamboyancy. Mm. And the rest of the atmosphere that it's hard to really, see what Tina Fey is actually going for.
I hear ya. I was going to say, speaking of new shows, the other new comedy I guess I've been following is a show called Last Man Standing.
How do you like that show?
It's going pretty well. For those of you who don't know, it's a new show. It's on Fox. It started maybe more than a month ago. It stars Will Forte, who's from SNL, and he also did... one movie that didn't do so great called MacGruber. Basically, the basis of the story is real simple. And the backstory doesn't really have anything to do with the story right now. But the backstory is basically, he's the last man on Earth. And there's some sort of virus. And the first episode starts with him just traveling around on an RV, crossing off each state he visits to find somebody. He doesn't find anybody. Comes back to where he was, which is Arizona. Posts up in a mansion and just... all of a sudden, then he runs into... another woman, her name's Kristen Shaw, I think her name is, who, those of you may or may not know her, but she was on The Daily Show a lot as a correspondent, and she has written a few books, but I don't find her funny. I think she's annoying in the fact that her voice is very high-pitched, and also that her humor isn't very funny. Will Forte himself, I think, is very funny. The funniest parts of the show where I've actually laughed out loud were all from Will Forte.
Really?
I could really, really tell that. And this is true, too, because I looked up a little research into the show and the production, that the pilot episode was really, really highly involved Forte. Because what had happened is the show was created and was going to be run by the guys who directed the Lego movie. And they had the idea, and then somehow Forte got wind of it, and he put his spin on it, and the guys that did the Lego movie were like, that's awesome. And they really let him kind of run the pilot episode, which is the best of all of them.
Yeah.
And then after that, you could see how kind of the network heads came in and other people came in, gave their notes.
Yeah.
And kind of, it really kind of diluted it. And now it's on a point where now there's January Jones, who's from Mad Men. She's there.
Yeah.
There's another guy that they found. He's there. And now they're basically just four people just living in this deserted town, just bickering about who needs to shower and all that stuff. So it's really... Yeah. But the first episode was very Will Forte. It's very raunchy. It's very out there, especially for Fox primetime. It really took its chances. But then after the first episode, it really just kind of got watered down so much.
Well, and I would have really liked to have seen, when I first caught wind of the show, I would have loved to have seen, because I think Will Forte could have done it. Matter of fact, I know he could have. Most of the first season, just Will Forte by himself. Spin out the whole bowling, fish tanks and lighting mannequins
and
on
just
fire.
Living in a filth pit.
Just, and let it go slow. Like, let's see his beard evolve over time. Yeah. Let's see how gross he can become.
It's like David Tell meets Tom Hanks from
Castaway. Like, have the balls to do like a Castaway show, at least for a first season. Because I agree, I don't think Kristen Schaal is a very good leading lady. And correct me if I'm wrong, I've only seen the first few episodes, but she's actually more of a main character than January Jones, is that right?
Yeah, she's pretty much, I wouldn't say equal to Will Forte. Will Forte is still the center of the show, but she's probably a good 40% of the show.
Really?
30-40% of the show is Kristen Schaal.
And, you know, it's, I don't know. Like, well, here's the thing. All those SNL people and a lot of the comedians, you know, who are from New York and have done Second City, etc., they all kind of run around together. Yeah. I totally get that, you know, and so they probably wanted to work together. This is, you know, it's their call. Again, it's another Hollywood thing.
Was Kristen Schaal on SNL as a writer?
No, but I, you know, Daily Show, and, you know, I just feel like in New York, all the comedians pretty much know each other.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it, the Judd Apatow people know the SNL people.
That's true.
Lonely Island people, you know, they pretty much kind of run through everybody. I mean, they've been on the Oscars. They did the music for, you know, the Lego movie. You know, yeah. That's the thing. I'm not going to try to get off on a rant or anything, but Patrice O'Neill, the late great comedian, once said, you know, Hollywood and the game you have to play inside of it is very incestuous.
Hmm.
And,
smart man.
Yeah, he, I don't know.
Which is funny, because he was on a few episodes of The Office.
If you yeah, know, he was.
Way back when.
Oh, yeah. He was in the, he was actually on up until the fifth season.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I know he was in the first couple seasons. He was, like, played one of the warehouse guys.
There's one episode that made me laugh so hard. He made some comment to, oh, what's Ryan's girl? Kelly on.
Kelly Kapoor.
Kelly Kapoor on The yeah. Office. She says something about him being fat. Calls him. She's like, oh, what about you, whale? You're like 800 pounds. He's like, yeah, I bet you like to swim with this whale, bitch.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I kind of think they could have done better with a different female. I think she's more comic relief than she is a lead. However, I also got to say, it's kind of cool they're at least giving her a chance.
Yeah,
I don't see this show lasting more than a season.
I don't. I really want it
to. Two, maybe.
The main reason for me is because if it's original and it's funny and it has a clear vision of what it is, people will generally give it a chance. Now, obviously, this day and age in television, you have to hit it right off the bat, or usually you're not going to have the ratings, and they're going to pull the plug pretty early.
Yeah.
But with a show like that, that you could tell that Fox took a chance on, I think you hit the nail on the head where it was Will Forte should have kept, and maybe he was trying to, or maybe, like I said, the networks came in and censors came in and said, oh, yeah, like dilute a little bit, which I think is what happened.
But it happens to most shows, even the shows we love.
But now it's becoming a show where you watch it, and I get frustrated because I'm like, what does the show want to be? What is the show? Because the show started off being, here's if you will, the average everyday man, I guess, if you will.
Yeah.
Come to the realization that he literally traveled across the entire country, and there's no one there. And he's kind of a aloof guy that just doesn't care anymore. So he's just like, fuck it. And he just does the craziest things where he steals the Declaration of Independence and uses it as toilet paper, or he steals famous paintings and just puts it in his room because he can. And and you know, he just, like you said, he does lights bowling balls on fire and
schools
him down the street. Just crazy stuff like that where you could see, like, okay, I can see that. And you see him slowly turn crazy where he makes fun of, he watched Castaway and he makes fun of Tom Hanks and he goes, why are you talking to a volleyball, idiot? That's just a ball. And you slowly, like later, you see him, and not only is he talking to a volleyball, but he has like a golf ball, a racquetball.
Yeah. He draws smiley faces on every single one of them.
And then he puts them all around this bar and names every single one of them.
Yeah.
I thought that was really clever because he went even crazier than Tom Hanks. But it went from that, which is very original, very Forte, very just like, really, you know, other comedies like it too. Now it's like every comedy I've ever really seen, which is now it's him trying to be a couple with Kristen Schaal, but he doesn't really want to be because he's attracted to January Jones and they have this weird chemistry. And it's just like, well, that I've seen that a million times. You know what
well,
I mean?
And also, I saw the picture. I like the Facebook page, so I still get like updates. I saw the picture of the guy, Phil.
I think it's Phil, yeah.
Yeah, and he just looks like a. Sorry to sound me, but just like a nobody. Like, why the fuck is he on the show?
Yeah,
like, it doesn't make sense. It really should have just been, again, for the first season, just him. I loved in the first episode, it showed a flashback of his birthday with his family, his mom, which, by the way, in that flashback, as he's blowing out his candles, that's Will Forte's real mom next to him that gives him a kiss on the cheek.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I really think they could have done something really cool if they had let him go most of the season by himself. Mm-hmm. And then just reflect on, because the whole premise that I had heard before the show started, you know, this man's already kind of an individual who's agoraphobic,
mm-hmm.
not really the best at social skills. And, you know, I think they could have really built off that.
Yeah.
And just watch him make more quote-unquote friends with the, you know, the balls that he, you know, makes smiley faces on.
Yeah.
Like, he just kind of builds onto his friends as the show's as the show goes on.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things where, God forbid, if I ever had an idea for a show and got picked up, I could just imagine the amount of pressure you have to write the episode, get it on air, and then all the editing you have to do, and then you have to pass it by. Because if the network execs come down and they say, nope, you have to cut that, well, they technically own the rights to the show. So a lot of times you do have to do what they have to say. So God knows what they really want to put on television and what they end up having to put on television. I think they're two different things. And obviously anybody who knows the history of the Chappelle show, that's one of the main reasons that Chappelle left. It wasn't because he went crazy, which is they're trying to make it seem, or that he went AWOL. It was really because he looked at it and said, yeah, I can make a bunch of money, but I'm ruining my life because I'm working 20 hours a day. I already put two seasons down, which are some of the two funniest seasons ever.
Mm-hmm.
I might as well quit on my head.
Of television.
Yeah, and
in
also,
that time period.
And also, too, now that I'm getting a huge season that everyone knows about now, I'm getting a huge contract that everyone knows about, now I have 10 times the amount of pressure, and everyone's going to be pulling apart every episode. If I walk away now, everyone's going to be wanting more, and that's what you want. You don't want to do everything and then get to the point where people are like, oh, that's tired. You know, you want to leave people, like, give them 2 years and I'm done.
Let me pose a question to you. I once heard Jay Mohr say, he once called him, granted, Jay Mohr is, he's not the greatest comedian. He's also not, moreover, he's not even one of the nicest, most honest people either. He's kind of a little bit of a baby. However,
I heard him steal a skit straight up from somebody one time.
Yeah. Oh, he.
I forget what it was, but it was a story. It was about Tracy Morgan.
Yeah.
And he does it. I give him a fair shot. He does a really good impression of Tracy Morgan. It's funny, but the story was actually directly from a guy named Bert Kreischer.
Yes, how you get a paid out of the check, Bert.
Yeah,
yeah, I know what you're talking
about. It was
about
a crazy story, basically of
getting thrown out of a strip club.
Yeah, of him being him, just being crazy. But then all of a sudden, Jay Mohr goes on stage and he just starts saying it like it's his story.
Jay Mohr got fired from SNL because he had stolen from, and I'd have to look it up, from another famous comedian from years ago. Basically, and Jay Mohr, I've noticed he has a pattern of that when it comes to him being a comedian. If he gets to a point where he feels frustrated that nobody finds him funny, he will take other people's material. I could probably pull out two other examples right now of him at a point where he felt nobody was listening to him, that he was such hot shit that he feels like, fuck it. If you're not going to listen to my shit, I'm going to get on by stealing somebody else's shit. And then that's how I'm going to build my credibility.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I'm probably talking. By the way, I just want to take a time out real quick. Anything I say, I can't speak for Daniel, obviously. Anything I say, you can almost bet I'm 90% full of shit. I'm only offering my opinion. Again, I gladly invite any of you to debate me on anything I say because I don't know anything about what I'm talking about. However, when it comes to Jay Mohr, I'm not a big fan of him, but he once said something that I thought was interesting. He once called Dave Chappelle a sore winner.
Hmm.
What do you think of that?
I think that's partly true. I mean, I know what he's talking about, where Dave Chappelle was at a point where he hit a pinnacle, which is not necessarily a pinnacle. Obviously, he was making decent money, but he was about to get a huge, huge contract for what he did. which is obviously what people usually want. But he did get to a point where everybody was saying, like, again, what people say about Dave Attell being comedian's comedian. Everybody within the industry, without the industry, comedians, people who've been around television forever were like, Dave, this is one of the funniest goddamn shows we've ever seen. We'll give you whatever you want. We'll pay you whatever you want. We just want more. And in that sense, he did win, because people who know before that, Dave Chappelle did struggle. He had Half Baked, but
yeah.
At the time, that wasn't a hit at all. He probably didn't make that much at all off Half Baked. And he went from little parts from here and there and had a couple pretty decent comedy albums, but wasn't anything near Chris Rock or anyone like that. And all of a sudden, now he's at the very top after he struggled for almost 20 years to get there.
Yeah.
And I could see Jay Moore being from where he's from in his life, staring up at Dave Chappelle and being like, come on, man, just do it, you know?
Well, and that's, I think some of that also, again, stems from some of Jay Moore's jealousy, but, like, you know, I kind of get what he's saying, a little bit. But you, with him coming from a pretty hard place, from, you know, poverty and building himself up as a very young comedian, even at a young age, you know, other famous comedians who are, you know, 5-10 years older than Chappelle, you know, were watching him at nightclubs just being blown away by his material. He just had new stuff night after night. I think he might have been one of these people who, once his own creativity started, you know, hitting airwaves and people really enjoyed him, I think he was just scared of what it was going to lead to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where we always really, really want something, but then we're not always cognizant of when it actually happens.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, it actually scares them, because they're like, oh, and you don't realize until maybe years later, you take a step back and you look at it and you're like, I had what I wanted. But at the time, you're so, especially, you know, like I said before, with Dave Chappelle, if you ever read an interview he's given, or not just him, but there's a guy that he worked with. He co-created the show with a guy. I'm drawing a blank on his name. But he's a pretty famous comedian. His brother was an even more famous comedian. But he co-created the show with this guy.
You're not talking about Charlie Murphy, are you?
No, Charlie Murphy.
I didn't think he
joined the show, but he didn't co-create it. Co-create was another guy. It was a white guy.
You know who else, by the way, was in that show that I didn't realize years later who it was? Bill Burr.
Yeah, he was in the show.
I thought that was so funny. Yeah. Like, I was watching some clips a while back, and I recognized him. But yeah. But
there's a couple interviews that, not this isn't just from Dave Chappelle, but from the guy who's a co-creator of the show, which is a white guy, and I'll think of his name later, but
yeah.
But he was just like, hey, when we were making that show for those two seasons, it was actually miserable, because we were responsible for shooting it, editing it. I mean, it was, they didn't hit it big yet. They were just a regular show on Comedy Central back in the 2000s, where all Comedy Central had was South Park.
Yeah.
So they didn't have any money from Comedy Central either, and they were working 20 hours a day just to get things shot, get it edited, get the places shot, and then
it was on their own time and their own dime.
Oh, yeah. And so at that time, it's, you know, they did an amazing job, but at the time, they said when they were doing the show, I mean, they had no lives. And Dave Chappelle never saw his kids, and he never saw his family.
Right.
You know, so people say, like, how could you walk away from that? Well, maybe Dave Chappelle values his family and his life more than just more millions of dollars. You know what I mean? So,
you know what's funny, thinking about all this, people are so obsessed, comedians rather, are so obsessed with getting the Louis deal as it's becoming known.
Yeah.
They're obsessed with getting the Louis deal, which, you know, Louis, if you
explain,
don't know,
yeah, explain a little bit what that means.
The Louis deal is something that I'm hearing, I've heard Jim Gaffigan, Mike Birbiglia, I've heard quite a few people refer to it as that. The Louis deal is in reference to Louis C.K. Louis C.K., if you don't know, very funny comedian who has his own show on FX called Louis. It's won tons of awards. It's incredibly original. And he has been given permission by FX to basically do whatever he wants. He writes, he directs, he stars, he does everything. And people are just so enamored with his success that comedians are looking for that same deal. And I think Chappelle had a Louis deal before Louis was even you know, contemplating it. Maybe it was probably even before Lucky Louie, I would bet.
Yeah.
And Lucky Louie was a show Louis C.K. was on before, you know, the FX show.
Yeah, and that's definitely true because, you know, for example, you know, with these contracts people do for television, like I said before with these execs, is that they basically are saying, okay, yeah, you can do your show, but at the end of the day, we own the rights to your show. So at the end of the day, if we don't want you to air it, or if we think that you're too vulgar, we can tell you to change this line in the script. But when someone like Louie comes around, the only way that Louie got that deal was because he was literally able to work for next to nothing. They gave him a budget of $250,000 an episode. Now, that sounds like a lot of money. When you talk about all the cast and crew, you talk about all the cost to travel, to put up, to edit, all the time.
Just to get a helicopter. Yeah. He had to rent a helicopter for his first episode. And he's talked about that almost depleted his budget.
Yeah, and for those of you, to give you a frame of reference, a show, like a major show, and like, say, ABC or CBS, let's say, for example, one of the million of crime shows that's on CBS, probably one of those episodes, you know, the LL Cool J is looking at a rape victim type of show.
Cool J and a half Asian.
Or Ice-T's trying to figure out what a pedophile is. But one of those shows probably costs almost $2 million. Yeah, I mean, it's a 40-minute show, plus commercials, it's an hour. But a 40-minute show just for the content. But you have actors, you have all that stuff. That's probably at least $1 million. Now, you have somebody who you give them $250,000 to cover not only just Louis, how much Louis getting paid, that's everything. And so,
And Louis is one of those people, I'm sure, I don't know this for a fact, but I would almost bet he made sure everybody else was taken care of. Excuse me, before he got his cut.
Yeah, I think he definitely did because, he can't just pay himself and then be like, well, how much. I think what he does.
Well, that wouldn't be how it would work anyway if he's the one in charge. So he would have to. That's his responsibility.
I think that. and a lot of comedians are going for that, where it's just like, I want my own control and I want to do my own thing. Yeah. But you have to look at it as in like, well, do you have the talent? A lot of people can be a good stand-up comedian, but okay, can you be a good director? Louie, for those of you who haven't watched the show, Louie, it's an original show. And so a lot of comedians, if they were given a chance to have their show, they're not going to have something, I'm not going to say like Louis as in like similar to Louis. I mean like Louis as in the fact of, is it going to be original? Right. Are they going to be able to direct it, have a vision for the show, have its own voice in the show, be honest with people? I don't think so. You're in a lot of the same Mike and Molly's and all those kinds of shows where we've seen it a million.
Time, I've had just about enough from Big Bang Theory. I don't know about you.
I never thought that was funny. I thought I can see jokes coming from a mile away.
Yeah. Again, that's kind of what we were talking about earlier. It really takes an element of surprise to get me.
It's kind of like Everybody hard. Loves Raymond. It's like, oh, here comes an old guy joke. He wants a sandwich. Marie, I want a sandwich.
Deborah, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Robert.
Raymond. It's just like everyone had their solid jokes. The mom would come in, she'd be like, you can't cook.
She'd be a huge bitch. The kids would run around. Deborah would freak out. Again.
Yeah, Deborah would be like, get off the couch. And the show's, or the game's on, Deb, or something.
Which, by the way, it's really hard to do a family show like that anymore. My opinion, I think Home Improvement was the last family show that got away with that. Mm-hmm. I think that formula for a television show just doesn't work anymore. There are some episodes, I'm not going to lie, I'll watch Everybody Loves Raymond from time to time, but I think Home Improvement was really... I'm really trying to think too, but I honestly believe it was the last show that got away with that household formula.
Yeah, I think it was too, and I think that... And I never thought Friends was that funny, ever.
I liked it.
But I think
also... I had two sisters who were addicted to it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a hell of a lot better than watching Full House.
That's true. I think in the same vein, you're talking about that. Everybody Loves Raymond. or Home Improvement, I'm sorry, was the last family type of sitcom to actually work and be funny, kind of. I think Friends, even though I didn't personally find it that funny, I think Friends was the last all-friends, single-ensemble comedy that's really made it. And now there's so many of those shows that have been on or on now, where it's like, oh, we're all in our 20s and we're living in the same apartment and we're just going out on the weekends and we're trying to date and stuff. And it's like, okay, but we've seen it so many times. And it's like,
well,
it's been overdone so much.
And it's to me, it's still a decent show.
It's like, wait, this one's a new show. This one has Gene Vanderbeek in it.
Yeah, well, oh, okay. I read an article where they were saying in any other context with any other actors or actresses, Friends would not have worked. It's the exception to the rule is what they call it.
Really?
And there are shows like that that they call the exception to the rule. I'm trying to think if there are any other shows like that right now where any other formula or any other cast.
I'd probably say, I mean, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. If it wasn't for that cast, I wouldn't have made it.
Yes.
If it was not for Charlie Day and all those guys.
However, they were experiencing some problems with the ratings. The execs loved it. They did not want to pull It's Always Sunny. The same exec that hired, that got Louis his job on FX, told Glenn Howerton, Rob McElhenney, and Charlie Day, this is a good show, but you need a star in here. And they go, well, we don't want a star. They're like, well, then we're going to pull it. They're like, okay, who do you have? And they recommend, I don't know if they recommended Danny DeVito or how that happened, but that's how he got into the mix.
That's kind of funny. They're like, you need a star. Danny
DeVito. Yeah.
That's kind of like, what?
Who says that? Like, most people are like, you know.
What was, oh. Was Bruce Valanche busy?
Who's not dead from Hollywood Squares?
Louis Anderson's doing something on Travel Channel, so he's out. Sinbad's doing something on whatever.
So. I'm so glad Sinbad's not a thing anymore.
I have vague, not to get too much of a tangent, but I have a vague, vague memory of, remember those really random late night stand-up comedy, there's all different kinds of ones. Comedy Central would actually just have huge blocks of hours of television purely just to show stand-up.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember watching Sinbad was all over the place back in the mid-late 90s.
Yeah.
And I didn't get the fad, but he'd be on stage in like a tracksuit and a weird hat.
I'll tell you what. I think this has been a pretty good show, don't you?
I think it's gone well. Did we hit record, or are we just talking?
Yeah, no. It's recording. We're good. No, sweet. That's a bad time to ask that question. had my heart all aflutter.
I'm just kidding.
No, you're good. Let's cap off. I want to know.
Final thought.
I want to know. I thought about this earlier today. I'd like to end our shows with a funny SNL sketch that you really enjoy. Can you think of any sketches?
Yeah, again, some of the odd ones that really made me laugh because they were so goddamn weird were my favorite. And I think you and I have talked about this, but it's a little known sketch done by the previously mentioned Will Forte. He basically, and I think you know what I'm talking about, basically the basics of the sketch, it's Halloween, it's John Hamm, and Will Forte plays basically a pedophile. Well, John Hamm doesn't know this. John Hamm is just a guy who lived in his house, and trick-or-treaters come. Will Forte is dressed up as a pedophile, that's what he is, and he goes and trick-or-treats, and John Hamm's just like, what are you doing? You're a grown man. He's like, yo, isn't this a great costume? I'm a pedophile. And he just goes, what? And he goes, yeah, it's part of my costume. I need you to sign this waiver saying I legally came to your house to let you know I'm a registered sex offender. And he goes, wait, is this real? An actual sex offender? Or are you just as a Halloween? And he goes, on Halloween? Yes, I'm a sex offender. And he just keeps doing weird stuff like that to try to get around the question.
Yeah.
And it was just so weird and so funny because at the very end of it, this is how far Will Forte takes stuff. This was on SNL and NBC.
At the very end of it, I remember the sketch.
John Hamm finally just goes, now listen. Stop avoiding the question. Are you guilty of being a pedophile by a judge? And Will Forte stops for a second. He goes, no, I am not. The only thing I'm guilty of is sexually assaulting 4 teenagers. He says that, and the crowd actually laughs. The crowd actually laughs. And,
yeah.
And then the sketch ends. It's only like a 2 or 3 minute sketch, and I just loved it because it was so out there. It was just two people. It was just Will Forte and John Hamm, and that was it. And it wasn't like a political thing. It wasn't like a reoccurring sketch. It only happened once.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird thing that no one knows about, really. But SNL fans probably do. But that, to me, is probably one of my favorite ones because it makes me so laugh in such a dark way.
Yeah.
What about you? What comes to your mind about a favorite one? Or
gosh.
One that stands out more than others?
By the way, real quick, would you say Will Forte is your favorite cast member from the show?
I wouldn't say he's probably my overall favorite. I think he's probably one of the... I'd probably say he's one of the most top underrated.
Yeah.
I'd say my favorite overall... Gosh, that's hard. I think it's probably a tie between... I really like Daryl Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
Tied with... I thought Bill Hader did an amazing job.
Yes.
And even though I'm partial because he's really recently left.
Yeah.
When history comes to tell in 20 years from now and their SNL's, you know, God willing, still going, I think we're going to look back and be like, Bill Hader was one of the best.
Oh, yeah.
All the stuff he did. So I'd say a tie between Bill Hader and, who did I just mention?
Daryl Hammond.
Daryl Hammond, yeah.
See, Daryl Hammond's my number one favorite, unequivocally. I do agree about Bill Hader. I know we discussed earlier about how Saturday Night Live always goes through those humps where, they're considered Saturday Night Dead, and they don't get very great reviews.
Him, Hader, Forte, and
Sudeikis, Wig,
Andy Samberg,
Kenan Thompson, yeah, like they all came. All those guys. Yes,
they all came because there was so Fallon left, Tina Fey was kind of leaving, 02, 03. And it was like, oh, here we go, Saturday Night Dead.
Amy Poehler kind of bled through into that next wave of cast members.
And then all of a sudden it was just like, boom, here is another huge amount of talent.
Yeah.
And obviously it took a couple years before anyone noticed it.
Yeah.
But then then you definitely notice it when they leave.
Yeah, like,
because
you notice it. Like, I really started noticing how great it was the season before Kristen Wiig left. I was like, season 33, 34... and 35, as season 34, which is oddly enough my favorite number, was, if you go back there, the last sketch of the night was still fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, there was, the final sketch of season 34, Will Ferrell hosted that show.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
They did this song, I think it's by Billy Joel, called Goodnight Saigon, where Will Ferrell, he's having dinner with three other friends of his, and they're asking him, weren't you in Vietnam? And he gets, like, he drifts off into his own world, and he starts singing Goodnight Saigon by Billy Joel. And everybody, most of the people who hosted that year came back on stage. Emily Blunt, Tom Hanks, Paul Rudd. Then there were some random people on stage, like Green Day, Artie Lang, Norm Macdonald was on. Amy Poehler came back. She had been gone a year. It was like the cool. I remember I watched it. There are a few moments where SNL makes me cry.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like one of the most beautiful. That's going to be the sketch I'm picking tonight. It's the season 34 last sketch of the year. If you ever get a chance, look at it. It is one of the coolest things.
I remember seeing that, yeah.
And
I couldn't remember the name of the song, but yeah, that was the song. Yeah.
And it's funny because they're like, he really toured Vietnam? No, he was there 2 weeks on vacation. What time did you say you go? And he's still in the song, like he's not even paying attention anymore. And then at the end, you see all these people who were in the song, all these famous actors and comedians. You know, like, they leave the stage two by two, and you hear audience members yell, "Hey, Norm! Hey, Artie! Green Day!" You know, like, it is so cool. And then it cuts to Kenan Thompson, Bill Hader, and Daryl Hammond at the table. They're like, "He just left without paying again. Why do we always fall for this?" You know, it's like one of the coolest things. But that's going to be the sketch.
Just fade into a Vietnam flashback.
Exactly. And it was really well done. But anyway, if any of you viewers would like to look that up, feel free to. It's a great sketch.
Well, awesome.
My name is Lucas Irwin. I'm glad you've been enjoying the show.
Yeah, it's been great. Again, my name is Daniel O'Neill. Thanks for having us. We'll do many more after this, like we said. Have any feedback, comments, put it down, and or requests for us to talk about something, put it down, and I'm sure we could talk about it. So
absolutely. Daniel, thank you for being here. Hopefully nobody's falling asleep.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, thanks for having me.
You bet. All right.
See you next time.
I want to find the pause button.